How's everybody doing this morning? Yeah, a little sparse. Did you struggle to find a seat this morning? All right, you can tell we're getting to the end of summer, and so things are kind of winding down as we then get wound up again in September. Well, I'm Jeff. I'm one of the co-lead pastors here at WMB, and so for people who don't know, there's two lead pastors here at this church. We have multiple locations, and so this morning I'm speaking on a certain subject, fasting. Yeah, you can laugh. When the staff team found out that I was preaching on fasting, for some reason they burst out laughing, and I can't figure out why. I don't know. But anyway, so I'm preaching here this morning, and then next weekend I'll be in Kitchener with this sermon to present it to Kitchener. And Sean, my co-lead pastor, is in Kitchener preaching a sermon, and he'll be here next week to preach that sermon. And so if you're from Kitchener, and you're here today, and you plan on going to Kitchener next week, you're gonna hear the same sermon from the same person. Now, you could play a bit of a game and go, but is it the same? Right? I mean, sometimes it shifts throughout the week and the Lord speaks to us slightly different. And so, you know, maybe you still wanna go over to Kitchener and hear it. That's fine, that's cool. But if you're really bored of me already, then you might not wanna go to Kitchener next week because you'll have me twice with the same sermon. So that's basically how it's been working all this summer. I hope that you've been getting something out of this series on spiritual disciplines this summer, the practice of spiritual disciplines that our team has been presenting to you all throughout the summer. I hope that it hasn't just kind of been something that passes in a whim. Like I've said this before, the Christian faith, it's not just something that you believe. It's that simple when it comes to salvation, but it's not that simple when it comes to living it, because Christianity is something that you live and that you practice each and every day, each and every moment, actually, of your life. You're living and practicing in faith. Now, the practice of worship and solitude and confession and Sabbath and lament and hospitality and silence, these are just a few, just a sample of the many practices that the scriptures present to us through the life of Jesus himself. So these are all, every discipline that we've presented to you has been disciplines that are found in the life of Jesus Christ himself. This is how he lived. These are the things that he practiced. And some of these practices, they're internal. They're from the inside, and things change from the inside out. And then some of these practices are external, things that people notice in our lives and in our actions. But folks, either way, the purpose of these practices is to make us more like Christ. And say that again, the purpose of these practices is to make us more like Christ. If you want to be more like Austin Matthews, anybody? I don't even know, Cristiano Ronaldo, is that a soccer player? Yeah, you want to be more like him? Just don't. But if you want to be more like Austin Matthews, you're going to have to study his shot. You're going to have to study each and every move that he makes. If you want to be like him, you got to learn to be just like him. It's the same thing in Christianity, folks. If we want to be like Jesus, you've got to learn everything that Jesus practiced in his life and then live that to then be like that. It's not a hard concept, is it? After all, folks, you can't do life for Jesus, right? How many people live their life for Jesus? You don't have to put up your hand. It's not a shame-based church. You can't do life for Jesus without doing life with Jesus. You can't do life for Jesus without doing life with Jesus. This is what these practices or these disciplines are all about, drawing us closer to Jesus so we can become more like Jesus. Now this morning, like I said, we're not gonna practice fasting. We're not going that far. We're going to talk about the practice of fasting. Now, from a 3,000-foot level, here's a basic definition of fasting. And I'll kind of start to unpack this along the way. Fasting is the practice of voluntarily abstaining from food or certain activities for a specific period of time with the intention of deepening our connection with God and nurturing our souls. So, right away when I hear definitions, I tend to kind of analyze them and pick them apart. And so right away, if you're anything like me, this definition causes me to ask a few questions. Like, how does not eating possibly connect me to God? Especially if you've grown up in the life of the church, which all we do is eat. Right? The best way to connect with God is to have a potluck. Go to a seniors event. Eat, 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 right? That's what we do. We got to eat food. That's what the church does. It's how we connect with one another. It's how we connect with Jesus, right? So how could this definition possibly be right when the church says eating is how you do this? So how does not eating connect me to God? And is it actually all about not eating? Like, for instance, too, when this, you're going to find this funny too. When I don't eat, I get grumpy. So what you have is like a famished pastor who's just grumpy. You don't want that. You want a happy pastor. And or how does abstaining from certain activities nurture my soul? These questions are part of the exact reason, folks, why fasting is one of the least practiced disciplines in the North American church today. As a matter of fact, statistics show us that the North American church has basically said, yeah, we don't really do that. That's like a thing of the past. That's like an Old Testament thing. We don't really practice fasting. I mean, we might practice intermittent fasting to get skinny, but that's not what they're talking about here. So, like, the practice of fasting is so misinterpreted, so misunderstood in the life of the church, especially in North America. I hope today I can kind of help readjust that, help to fix that. Now, this is such a messed up topic that we can go all the way back to the prophet Isaiah. Anybody ever heard of him? Isaiah has an amazing correction that he gives to the people who were practicing fasting at the time, which is all of the Jewish people. Fasting was very important in their culture and about their obedience to God. Fasting was something they did in Jesus' time. They did at least twice a week. Listen to Isaiah's correction and Jesus' correction. And so we're going to start with Jesus first. Let's go to Matthew chapter 6. Verses 16 to 18. Jesus says this, and when you fast, don't make it obvious. So hold on. Jesus says, and when you fast. So right away, if you're saying fasting is an Old Testament thing, you're wrong. That's not true. Jesus says, and he doesn't say, and when you used to fast, but now that I'm here, you never will again. He says, and when you fast, don't make it obvious as the hypocrites do. For they try to look miserable and disheveled, so people will admire them for their fasting. I tell you the truth, that is the only reward that they will ever get. But when you fast, comb your hair, wash your face, you know, have a shower, clean yourself up a little. Then no one will notice that you're fasting except your Father who knows what you do in private. And your Father who sees everything will reward you. Folks, this is a fascinating passage that just brings up all kinds of questions. Jesus is teaching his disciples to fast differently than the hypocrites. But who are the hypocrites here? Now, often when we think of hypocrites, we'll think of, you know, the Gentiles, those who don't believe. But in this case, he's talking about the hypocrites who do believe, the Jewish folks that have been taught to practice fasting. He's saying you're doing it in hypocritical ways. Your whole motive is wrong. Because the Pharisees often practiced fasting to seem spiritual, to show everybody how spiritual they were, rather than to connect deeper with God. They would actually put dirt on their face and try to look all disheveled. And that's just a great word, disheveled, right? How do we look disheveled? Well, just look in the mirror in the morning, right? But they would do this on purpose. It's like that person was like, oh, yeah, I'm fasting. Right? And you have to touch the tummy when you say that. Right? Because you're like looking for people to notice, because then they'll see you as spiritual, because the Bible calls us to fast. But you see, when you fast for the reason of piety, for the reason of spiritual, looking spiritual or seeming holy, Jesus says you're completely missing the point. So he says, don't be like them. Now, I mentioned Isaiah earlier. I want you to see how these passages live together, because what Jesus is doing in many ways is just referring back to what Isaiah is saying, except Isaiah is going to hit you right on the bridge of the nose. And so let's also go to Isaiah chapter 58, verses 1 to 9. And here is an Old Testament correction around fasting. He says, shout with the voice of a trumpet blast. Shout aloud. Don't be timid. Tell my people Israel of their sins. So he's telling them that what they're doing, what he's going to correct them on, is sin. He says, yet they act so pious. They come to the temple, they go to church every day, and seem delighted to learn all about me. They act like a righteous nation that would never abandon the laws of its God. They ask me to take action on their behalf, pretending they want to be near to me. We have fasted before you, they say. Why aren't you impressed? Fasting in order to impress God. We've been very hard on ourselves and you don't even notice it. I will tell you why. I responded, it's because you are fasting to please yourselves. Even while you fast, you keep oppressing your workers. What good is fasting when you keep on fighting and quarreling? This kind of fasting will never get you anywhere with me. You humble yourselves by going through the motions of penance, bowing your heads like reeds bending in the wind. You dress in burlap and cover yourself with ashes. Is that what you call fasting? Do you really think this will please the Lord? No, this is the kind of fasting I want. Now listen very closely and don't misinterpret this. Free those who are wrongly imprisoned. Lighten the burden of those who work for you. Let the oppressed go free. And remove the chains that bind people. Share food with the hungry and give shelter to the homeless. Give clothes to those who need them. And do not hide from relatives who need your help. Oh. Then your salvation will come like the dawn and your wounds will quickly heal. Your godlessness will lead you forward. And the glory of the Lord will protect you from behind. Then when you call, the Lord will answer. Yes, I'm here, he will quickly reply. Remove the heavy yoke of oppression. Stop pointing your finger and spreading vicarious rumors. Now, one of the big mistakes we make with this passage very quickly is we say, no more fasting from food or other things. It's just about social justice. That's not what this passage is saying at all. Because the fact of the matter is, folks, you can do social justice for all the wrong reasons as well. So what is going on here? Well, Jesus is actually pointing out the same thing as Isaiah. When you fast, don't make it about you. It's actually not about you. Make it about Jesus. The kind of fasting that Jesus calls us to is the kind that denies self and opens ourselves up. This is really important, folks. Opens ourselves up to the transforming power of Jesus, the transforming power that helps us love God and love others more each day. And so when you're doing the fasting that Isaiah is talking about that leads to the social justice, to the kindness to others, it's motivated by the transformed heart that you receive from pressing closer and closer and closer to Jesus. It's not about you. Fasting is not about being more spiritual or getting what you want from Jesus. or about how you look as a Christian. Fasting has a deeper purpose than that. Let's quickly look at the Old Testament for a second. In the Old Testament, fasting was very, very normal. All the Jews participated in it. There was really kind of four main reasons why the Jewish people in the Old Testament would fast. And the first was for consecration. The second was for grief and sorrow. The third was for intervention. And the fourth was for repentance. And so if you read the whole Old Testament, which I highly recommend, that's what you'll find that they're often fasting for. Now, this is fascinating because consecration is a process in the Old Testament and there's all kinds. Read Levitical law and things like that. I'm not going to get into all that this morning, but there's all kinds of ways to become consecrated. But the main reason of why you need to become consecrated is so that you can approach God, so that you can be right with God, so that you can be seen as holy, as set apart from others with the purpose of pleasing God. So whenever you see the scriptures say to consecrate yourselves, that's the whole purpose behind it. And so fasting was often part of the consecration process. And then there was times of grief and sorrow. Fascinating. So the Jewish people during grief and sorrow would turn to fasting as they suffered loss. How many people have been to a funeral? What do? We eat. Right? We eat. So in Old Testament, it's the opposite. During times of grief and sorrow, you fasted. You didn't feast. You fasted. You didn't eat little mini sandwiches and look like that person that's got a plate full of 10 of them. Right? You always look when you're, yeah? Does anybody connect with me when you're at a, and you're hungry at a funeral and you're like, like three of these sandwiches just isn't going to do it. But now I've got 10 piled on my plate and it's really not that much food, but no, I'm alone. Gareth, buddy, you got it. You know what I'm talking about. Now, intervention, of course, right? People would fast because they wanted God to intervene on a situation that was difficult, on something that they wanted to change in their life. And this is interesting too, for repentance. Fasting was practiced to show sorrow for sin, but more specifically, folks, in the Old Testament, fasting was practiced to receive forgiveness from that sin. Now, many of these Old Testament reasons for fasting actually don't exist anymore. They don't exist anymore. That's why Jesus teaches about fasting in a whole new way. So listen to how Jesus responds when he's asked about why his disciples aren't fasting. Matthew chapter 9, verses 14 to 17. One day the disciples of John the Baptist came to Jesus and asked him, "Why don't your disciples fast like we do and the Pharisees do?" Jesus replied, Do wedding guests mourn while celebrating with the groom? Of course not. But someday the groom will be taken away from them and they will fast. So again, not an Old Testament concept, but also a new. Besides, who would patch old clothing with new cloth? For the new patch would shrink and rip away from the old cloth, leaving an even bigger tear than before. Fascinating, because my kids buy pants without half the front on them. Anyway. And he says, "No one puts new wine into old wineskins, for the old skin would burst from the pressure, spilling the wine and ruining the skins. New wine is stored in new wineskins so that both are preserved." Folks, Jesus is teaching his disciples that we don't fast like they did in the Old Testament anymore. Why? Because we have Jesus. Because we have Jesus. We no longer need to be consecrated because Jesus' death and resurrection are what make us holy in the eyes of God. The curtain ripped in the Old Testament in the Holy of Holies. We can now approach the throne of God through Christ. And so we are consecrated through him. Jesus makes us holy, not our actions, not our behaviors. This is what, remember way back when I introduced this whole sermon series like a couple months ago? This is why behavior modification and works of righteousness don't work. We don't fast for forgiveness Jesus offers us forgiveness when we believe in him and we give our life to him. Forgiveness that is then given to us free and completely unconditional. We practice the discipline of fasting. Listen very closely to this. Because we have been given a taste of God's kingdom, and nothing else will now ever satisfy us. Because in God's kingdom, the way to abundance is through abstinence. Once you've experienced Jesus, I'll kind of interpret that for you. Once you've experienced Jesus in your life and you begin to have a relationship with him, there's nothing this world can offer that will ever compare. This is what Jesus is saying. His disciples have the experience of being with him so that they don't need to fast when they're with him, but he'll not always be physically present with them. And so once he's gone, they will fast again with the purpose of tasting his kingdom presence. Now, this leads me to what this message is all about, and it's not going to take that long. That wasn't the intro. What does fasting accomplish in our lives today? So I'm going to kind of weave through just three basic things that fasting's accomplished and sort of define some of these things. The first point is this. Fasting, and this is my favorite point, is a spiritual power boost. Does anybody drink those, like, I'll go over to this side. Does anybody drink those, like, caffeine drinks, anything like that? Anybody going to admit it with mom and dad in the room? Yeah, okay, there we go. As soon as I said with mom and dad in the room, I'm like, yeah, forget that. Anyway, it's like this fasting is a spiritual power boost. There's this story in Mark chapter 9. I highly recommend, I'm not going to read it here. We don't have time, but in Mark chapter 9, write that down, Mark chapter 9, you can go and read the narrative there, where Jesus is confronted by a man with a son who's demon-possessed. And the man had asked Jesus' disciples to cast out this specific demon, which they had successfully done in the past. And so in the narrative, it makes sense that he would go to the disciples because the disciples had successfully done this. But this time, they were not able to cast out this demon. So Jesus steps in and he deals quite easily with the demon, casting it out of the boy. And so in the narrative, it says his disciples were perplexed. My favorite parts of the Bible, they were perplexed. Those are always great moments because Jesus is about to give you some zingers. It's really good. So they were perplexed and they asked Jesus, why were they unable to cast out, why couldn't we cast out this demon using your name? And Jesus' answer is amazing. I love it. He says, this kind, interesting. This kind can only be cast out by prayer and fasting. First of all, folks, did you see my hesitation there? This kind? Like in the North American church today, we're like demons. What are those? They're not a thing anymore. Jesus says there's different kinds. And that this kind didn't respond to their process, to their way of being cast out. It required prayer and fasting. So fascinating, a whole nother sermon series one day around the phrase, this kind, because there is different kinds of demons. He says, for this kind, you have to pray and fast in order to cast it out. It shows us that Jesus is constantly doing that. Prayer and fasting gives us a burst of Jesus' power that only practicing prayer and fasting can produce. Not just for casting out demons, but as you read the scriptures, also for dealing with sin and temptation in our lives. It's a passage in Corinthians, no temptation has been given to you that isn't common to man, to people, to all of us. Think about that, no temptation has been given to you or you or you, you that isn't common to me. But he says, but you will always, always, not sometimes, not occasionally, but always be given a way out. Prayer and fasting helps you see the way out. Fasting, folks, draws you closer to the kingdom of God. which empowers us through his Spirit to be more like him and to not succumb to temptation. Now, folks, we don't want to fast if there's medical issues. So when we're talking about food specifically, if there's medical issues or you know, where your doctor's saying, like, you cannot go without food, like, that's the thing. This is not what the scriptures, it's not tying everything solely to food. So don't fast if the doctor says you're not to do those kinds of things. Keep listening and you'll start to understand what fasting actually is. So my next point is fasting is like a spiritual MRI. We got a few doctors kicking around. I think they come, right, that use an MRI. What does an MRI do? It sees inside the things that we can't see through the common eye, right? It's a tool that helps you to see what is going on inside of yourself so that you can get a proper diagnosis and they can prepare a proper treatment plan. In the same way, fasting helps us to see deep within our souls so that we can be transformed by Jesus. Now, it's interesting, when you look up like some of the major causes of death and the issues that we have in North American culture, and did you know that food is the number one drug that's used in culture today? Do you want me to say that again? Food is the number one drug that's used in culture today. Obesity is one of our biggest problems and one of the biggest leading causes to other medical issues. Food is a thing in our culture, and it's not a good thing. We use it for all kinds of things that damage us spiritually and physically. Let me give you an example. Like the enemy. I hope you believe there is one, right? When there's good, there's bad. When there's bad, you get that? Another sermon, another day. The enemy uses food to slowly destroy us. Like when the enemy's whispering negative thoughts in your mind and creating shame in your life, you know, like you're no good. Maybe body shaming you. Different things like that. You're worthless. You should be ashamed of yourself. You know, the best way to get rid of a lot of those thoughts, especially if you're me, is a great big bowl of birthday cake ice cream or mint chocolate chip, whatever's your fancy, right? Like that solves everything, doesn't it? Like I'm kind of not feeling great about myself. You know, I'm a stress eater. So one of the things, I'll tell you a secret about myself. If I'm starting to grow, it usually means I'm stressed. If I'm shrinking, it actually means the opposite for me. So there was one church I was at years ago that I think I put on 60 pounds in 5.5 years at that church. I was a little slightly stressed. And what I do is birthday cake ice cream. Shaw's is the specific brand that I prefer the most, but I use eating to bring comfort from shame or from stress. I'm sure there's a few of you in here that maybe if you really did an MRI on yourself would see that it's very similar. See, fasting, listen very closely, denies us of food and takes away the unhealthy way that we comfort ourselves. It redirects the shame and stress toward Jesus. Of course, you can and should apply this to more than just food. So like I said, if there's medical reasons why you shouldn't eat, take that MRI in your life in other ways that aren't about food. What are the things in your life that pull you away from Jesus that you use to find comfort, that causes you to be unhealthy, to focus on something other than Jesus? You know, basically the Bible, the way that it describes health is very simple. It's not the way the North Americans describe health. It's simply this. The closer you are to Jesus, the healthier you are. The further away from Jesus, the more unhealthy you are, because it defines your health from the spiritual person, not as much the physical person. But the two are interconnected, aren't they? So anything that you use to find comfort that isn't you relying on Christ and drawing closer to him is unhealthy, because our focal point in life is Jesus Christ. Now, in North America, this is like, because our focal point is everything but Jesus most of the time. Look at the empty chairs in front of you. Now, this leads me to my final point. Fasting is like an exclamation mark on all of these spiritual disciplines that we've been talking about. Let me just read a couple Psalms for you. Psalm 42, verses 1 to 2. As the deer longs for streams of water, so I long for you, O God. I thirst for God, the living God. What can I go and stand before? When can I go and stand before him? How many people like woke up in the morning and went, I can't wait to stand before Jesus? That requires dying, right? This is what David's saying. I long for you, O God. I thirst for you, the living God. I can't wait to stand before you. This is his heart. In Psalm 63, verses 1 to 2, O God, you are my God. I earnestly search for you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you. In this parched and weary land where there is no water, I've seen you in your sanctuary and gazed upon your power and your glory. Is that your heart every morning? Is that the way that we go about living our lives? Like, God, I just long for you. In the midst of my suffering, I long for you. In the midst of my joy, I see that my joy comes from you. Are we living these Psalms? Notice this theme. David crying out for more of God. That's what he does. He's not perfect. He's all messed up. But he's revealing a heart that longs for his creator. And fasting, folks, helps us to want more of God. What I want you to remember is this. It gives us more of a taste of his kingdom that is to come. And we should want that kingdom. We should long for that kingdom. And denying ourselves and focusing on God's goodness draws us closer to him. Have you noticed something throughout this whole sermon series that all of these disciplines that we talked about have in common? I hope that you've noticed it. If you haven't, I'm going to tell you. It's simple. The practice of worship, solitude, confession, Sabbath, lament, silence, generosity and hospitality and fasting and all of these things, they all involve some form of abstinence or sacrifice. Have you noticed that? You see, folks, the disciplines teach us that the way to abundance, how many people want to live an abundant life? Yeah. So here you go. The way to abundance is through abstinence. I'm going to say that again. The scriptures, through the spiritual disciplines, through the life of Christ, show us that the way to an abundant life is through abstinence. Our world says it's all about getting more. It's all about wanting more. This more that we keep wanting, more's not working. When we fast, we're separating ourselves from the spirit of this age. You're going to hear a little bit more about that as we move into some other sermon series this fall. But the spirit of this age, just think of that as everything around you as it exists. But the spirit of this age, and beginning to join God and to develop a heart like his. Fasting and all the other spiritual disciplines practiced by Jesus, they all lead us toward a better way to live. So you want to know abundance. You want to know what the good life is according to the scriptures. It's through the lens of abstinence that leads you to abundance. A better way to find the kind of hope, comfort, and peace in our lives that we're searching for is to stop seeking more and to start seeking him. So in this series, we've been interviewing different people, having them give testimony about them practicing these different practices. And I got thinking about this, and I was like, how do I ask somebody to give testimony about a discipline that Jesus says to do in secret? And so I thought I'd throw my wife under the bus and call her up and just have a quick little chat. So this is my wife, Carrie, if you've never met her. She's a far better person than I am. Yeah. So fasting is something that we do in secret, but I happen to live with a person who practices fasting, and it affects my life. Only in good ways. Only in good ways. We're not going to prolong this too much, but welcome up to the front. You can see all the empty chairs in front of us, and we should be praying for that maybe, right? So, why do you practice fasting?
The main reason, obviously, would to me anyways, is to get closer to Jesus, to recenter and refocus my life. And usually, not all the time, but usually there's not... In special circumstances, there's times when I fast for seeking specific direction in, like, big decisions, whatever it is.
Like moving. We just moved
last week. Yeah. Things like that.
Yeah.
And I find that fasting itself, it's helpful to me because when I start to feel like hunger pains or the inclination of wanting to eat or turn to food, I find that I take that moment to remind myself to focus on Jesus or focus on the Holy Spirit or what He wants me to do. So I just take that as a trigger of, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be, you know, praying without ceasing. And so whether it's at home, if it's at home, I'll try to stop and read my Bible or journal or something. If I'm at work, I just, you know, pray in my head or even look at my situation around me, whoever's around me, and I'll usually pray for them or pray for the situation. So that's kind of how I implement that into my life at home and at work.
Yep. And so when you practice fasting, is it only food, or do you fast from other things, or is it mainly like what?
I sometimes will fast from social media too, or the news, but those would be the social media and food would be my main ones.
Yeah. And so you practice fasting really with the intent of getting closer to God, sort of clearing your life, you know, of the clutter. How many people have clutter in their lives?
In their brains.
And so you know, we need ways to sift through that, and fasting is one of the ways that you practice that. Mm-hmm. And so what do you find fasting does in your life and your relationship with Jesus more specifically? So let's dig in a little bit beyond the why.
Specifically, it gives me clarity and direction and just like a peace. So specifically, if I'm looking for some kind of direction, usually I'll find an answer within the fasting process. And usually to me, it's like a deep peace. It's just a deep calmness. It's just a clarity and a peace. And then I know, okay, this is where I need to go. What's the other thing? If I don't get that, sometimes it's just, I'll just keep pressing into God or pressing into, well, reading my Bible and journaling and stuff like that, and just returning back until I get that peace. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's cool. And so you're utilizing things like hunger pains and things like that to remind you of something, right? Yeah. So every time you have a hunger pain, you don't put dirt on your face and rip your clothes and start walking through downtown Waterloo whining about how hungry you are.
No.
Instead, you turn to prayer.
Yes.
And so it reminds you to take that to God. Tell me, how does that free you? I left script, so she's going to give me trouble later.
How does that free me? I think to me it frees me because it reminds me of my dependence on God and how much He has me. So I don't have to worry about... I just don't have to worry about things as much.
Yeah.
And I'm very much a worrier. So, you know, having that confidence that God's got me, that's my freedom. And that's what I usually am deeply reminded of when I do go through the fasting process.
Yeah. And so things like big decisions, times where you need clarity to hear from God, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a pastor, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, another piece too is like when we've been going through something whatever it may be, I find fasting is just a, it's just another way of really interceding for the issue, right?
Yeah.
So that's another way of, that I've used it before too.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you. Listen, folks, I don't want you to hear anything wrongly this morning. And so, like I said, really what it's all about is abstinence leading to abundance. And we need to look in our lives as we do the MRI, look inside, and say, am I distant from God right now? Am I hearing his voice? Do I need God's guidance more maybe than I normally do right now? And find the thing that leads you to that abstinence. Find that thing that you tend to really hone in on and focus on that distracts you from your relationship with Christ. And abstain from that thing. If it's food, you know, one of the things you could do, it's in the notes, I think there's some recommendations there. One of the things that you could do, if you do want to abstain from food short term, you could try to just miss 2 meals out of 3. Right? Then you got that supper that you're looking forward to. So what I'll do often is like skip breakfast and lunch because, you know, I'm focusing more on prayer. There'll be times where I'm in here praying at lunch hour when the staff are, you know, just gorging themselves. I'm sacrificing myself. No. As I was telling the story, I'm like, oh my goodness, this goes against the exact thing I said. Anyway, so you get the point. Take steps. Take steps. But there are things in our lives that get in our, that cloud us from the kingdom of God. And so learn what those things are as the worship team joins me up here. Learn what those things are. And figure out a way to take some time away from it. Something that reminds you it's time to pray. It's time to get to know Jesus a little bit more. And folks, I can tell you, as you do that, as it becomes a discipline, something you learn, something you practice, it's not something that instantly happens perfectly, you will draw closer to Jesus. Will you stand this morning as we transition into a time of worship? And I want to just challenge you to really just give this up to the Lord as we sing these words. Ask him to reveal to you what it is that's clouding your relationship with him.